Can't wait.
Can't wait. Can't wait.
It was a good game. Both teams play hard.
With no regard for human life.
To all the non-believers, all we hear is about their defense. They can't stop a nosebleed.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
Not the game that I go out there and die for.
This is grown man B.I.
I'm supposed to be the franchise player.
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Relax and take notes.
Hello and welcome to Can't Wait, where we are going to expose ourselves as a bunch of hypocrites over the next couple segments, because first off, we're going to talk about all of the moral and ethical problems with watching football in 2015, and after that, a 2015 NFL preview, because that's where we're at as sports fans right now. We've got Matt Milner with us.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
We got Rusty Boulay-Stevenson with us.
I'm excited to expose myself.
Oh, good. Great. Well, that's why it's radio. So, football. You know, we've talked about this a little bit before, but we're at a spot now where it almost feels like we're starting to know a little bit too much about the cost of playing this sport, where it's starting to impact people's enjoyment on Sunday afternoons. How are you approaching watching football this year, Matt?
I wish I could say that I'm approaching it differently, but I'm really not. I mean, the reality is it's very unsavory, and you know, each year, as you said, we learn more and more that makes it clear that there is sort of a moral hazard to the sport of football. And to fandom, and you know, both directly and indirectly supporting the kind of continued, perpetuation of really, really harmful effects for not only the people playing, but the people around them too, as well. You know that it can be a life ruiner.
There's collateral damage.
There's collateral damage, absolutely. And you know what I've struggled with, and what I've tried to wrap my mind around is that, on the one hand, I think that it's a little bit more cut and dry when you're talking about at the high school level, where you've got kids who are risking concussions, risking other traumatic brain injury, basically just for glory and fun and making decisions with the brain of a 15-year-old. I think in that situation, it becomes harder to justify letting kids play football. Once you get to the NFL and they're getting paid millions of dollars, and especially people entering the NFL now with much more knowledge, probably not full knowledge, but more knowledge than before of what the risks are, you know, one could say that they're sort of assuming the risk that this kind of injury could result from continuing to play.
And so many of them, when they talk about this, it wouldn't have dissuaded them if they knew.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, from that perspective, I think that you can kind of squint and come up with a way to justify these are adults, they're getting paid handsomely, the extent to which they're getting paid compensates to some extent for the risk of long-term harm, and that's why they get paid a lot. That's why the crab fishermen in Alaska get paid a lot of money, because there's a risk of bodily harm that's associated with it. All that being said, there's still a lot of other things that come along with watching football and supporting the NFL that just are ripe for making you very, very uncomfortable, whether it's just the sort of hypocrisy of the way that Goodell has reigned over the league, particularly over some of the more kind of moral issues facing the sport. We still have Daniel Snyder doing his Daniel Snyder stuff, which is always an uncomfortable reminder whenever you're watching NFC East games.
It's the most tasteless thing imaginable, and that it's still a conversation in 2015 is just beyond frustrating.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And then again, and this is not necessarily unique to NFL as opposed to other sports, but certainly more so, it seems like you find NFL players in the headlines for all the wrong reasons, and there's a sense that there's not really a culture of accountability. I mean, what better example than this really remarkable New York Jets fiasco, which I think maybe beats out DeAndre Jordan as the craziest sports story of the year.
Yeah, well, the DeAndre one was the most fun,
yeah.
The silliest, the most absurd. This Geno Smith getting clocked in the jaw by a 6-round pick?
Yeah.
That borderline kind of fringe roster guy?
Played about 30 plays last year.
That's bleak. That's so crazy that happened. But of course it happened.
And then, of course, the next day, Rex Ryan picked him up off of waivers.
Couldn't wait.
Like, so happy to bring in this guy. And, you know, like, well, we all make mistakes, but, you know, we like what he brings to the team.
I like what he did to Geno Smith specifically.
Right. So anyway, I mean, all that being said, it's just, you know, you're constantly bombarded by all of these things that make it really hard to justify, you know, why do I spend all of this time and money and mental energy on something that really, objectively speaking, if I had no prior relationship to football, it would be really hard to justify investing any of those things in this really horrible pastime.
Now, Rusty, you're on record on the times that we've talked about this, you're pretty much out on football.
Yeah. I mean, I made the decision a few years ago, and it goes with a larger decision that I made. You know, when before my child was born, we got rid of television, essentially. Mm-hmm. I didn't want television as part of his life for the first 2 years. And so that was part of getting rid of football at that point and kind of sports. I still pay a lot of attention to sports, obviously, but I don't watch very much. And so football, it really did become a moral issue with me, more and more so. But you know, it's that vested interest, right? Like, you guys watch it. Matt, you with your dad, it's a huge part of your family stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
to give that up is enormous. To not do it would...
I would basically never see my dad again.
Betray your father.
I mean, that would be
betraying your dad.
Yeah, that would be the end of our relationship,
football.
I think.
It's a
and I love my dad.
Yeah.
I keep football around because I don't know what I would talk about with most men.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, there's that, for
just
sure.
Being able to fill in small talk conversation gaps with fantasy football, who would you take, what happened that Sunday, you know, how do you feel about Tom Brady and the football, you know, just having that, like, that shared knowledge that doesn't really apply in any other field, where so many people have this, like, 90% expert level on something. That's what the NFL is. Mm-hmm. And college football, to a smaller extent, kind of fills that too. But no, the NFL dominates from September through the Super Bowl.
You always know you can have a conversation with people, even not just men, honestly.
Yeah.
It's women too. You can have a small talk conversation about football. And it's something that I still struggle with. And because of Can't Wait, I'm going to pay a lot more attention to football, and I find myself reading about the teams and caring about what's going on. But it's very troubling to me, everything that goes on with football. And it's the injury issue and it's the concussions, but it's more than that. You know, I have friends who played high school football. They have lingering issues from high school football that bother them. I've got a friend who is having trouble walking this last week because he played high school football and college football.
It's that accelerated arthritic conditions.
Yeah, and he's in his early 40s. Should not be having trouble walking, generally speaking, you know?
It's one of those things where usually... I think I would be more okay with it because, like, when you watch football, you're like, clearly these guys are doing harm to each other. I mean, the level of willful ignorance you would have to put on yourself to think that this isn't damaging is shocking. Mm-hmm. But the problem I have is supporting a league that seems to do the wrong thing every single time they run into a fork in the road.
Mm.
Supporting a league run by Roger Goodell is so counter to everything that I would do in my life on any
yes.
other issue, but he's infuriating. I mean, the way that they do this, the way that they're handling this Tom Brady football situation is absurd.
Mm-hmm.
That should have been at most, what, a $200,000 fine on the Patriots, shrug your shoulders, move on, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that this has drug out for months and months and months and turned into this scandal seems to only exist to shift attention away from the real problems with the game. I think it was Charlie Pierce that wrote a column for Grantland comparing it to Wag the Dog.
Yeah.
You know, just look at this. This thing doesn't really matter, but let's fixate on this. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we have real problems, but we're not going to address those because those don't really have solutions. We have a clear scapegoat here, and we're going to keep talking about this until everyone goes insane. And that's just one of, I want to say, two dozen different things that he has badly mishandled, from the Saints Bounty Gate situation where the guy that had his job before him had to come in and clean it up because he handled it so poorly.
Yeah.
The way that he handled the Ray Rice thing was insane. Mm-hmm. The way that he handled the Adrian Peterson thing was ridiculous. Greg Hardy, you know, every time he comes up with a suspension, he gets it wrong and has to backtrack. And the fact that he's going to continue to have this job probably for life, mm-hmm. because he's good at the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
Money. He's good at these TV deals. The owners love it. And I think the owners love having this, like, complete dolt out there to take all of the brunt of public criticism, to where they don't actually have to talk about what, I don't know, Bob Kraft is up to, or like what they're trying to do with these weird stadium financing deals. We don't have to actually look into what these 32 jerks are up to. Mm-hmm. We can fixate on this one idiot. I think they love it. Mm-hmm. And so it's never going to change.
Yeah.
And to support football is to implicitly condone the actions. And that's the part about it that is driving me up the wall. I can't reconcile that.
Yeah, and the other part, and this is a more visceral struggle that I have, but we know now about the toll of the injuries, not just on their physical health, but on their mental health.
Yes.
And again, this is not just, you know, something that's happened to fringe players who played in the 70s with, you know, less protective gear or less sophisticated medical equipment. I mean, the Junior Seau situation.
Yeah, we saw that during the Hall of Fame induction.
Yeah.
The way that they handled that so, so callously.
Yeah. And you know, he was not only one of the most popular defensive players of his era, but he was widely, during, you know, his playing career, perceived as being, you know, one of the good guys in football and a role model.
All-time good
guy.
Yeah,
exactly.
He's the template for what you would want to be if you ever played football.
Yeah.
And look what happened.
Yeah, exactly. And so the struggle that I have is, we know all of that now. And yet, when I'm watching football on Sunday, and especially if I'm watching the Dolphins and I have like a rooting interest in the game, when Cameron Wake, or this year when Ndamukong Suh, when one of those guys gets a blindside hit on a quarterback and lays him out, I jump out of my seats and I scream and I high-five the people around me, and you get excited.
Yeah.
And it appeals to this very brutish, you know, sort of, you know, primal part of us that still revels in violence and in, you know, and just that kind of the sheer pleasure that you get from experiencing domination over another thing. And in this case, it's indirect, obviously, because I'm not the one who's tackling Tom Brady. But for that moment, I mean, you feel that surge of adrenaline.
It's a reflex.
It's a reflex, exactly. There's not a part of me that's screening at this point. And for some people, obviously, it's gotten so, all the problems have gotten so severe, and their own moral sort of compass is strong enough that they've put up a filter before that reflex. But for me, it's not there yet. And it doesn't matter how many times I've read about the traumatic brain injury, and I've read about all the other things that happened, I haven't been able to build up that screen yet, so that when I'm watching a game, that's still my first reaction. And that part is really troubling, just personally, because it makes me feel like I'm a lousy person.
Well, and it's interesting to me, because I have probably put that up now at this point in my life,
sure.
where I'm totally with there. 10 years ago, I was flipping out and cheering for those hits. And now I'm to a point where it's hard for me to. It's hard for me to watch boxing when people are getting clubbed in the head with these one-pound weights on the end of people's hands.
Well, everybody's having a hard time watching boxing.
Well, yeah, no, it's true. Boxing is – but I put it in the same boat. It's really troubling in a lot of ways to see that. But at the same time, American football is just that, right? It's American. What is it that it appeals to Americans so much? Right, it's not appealing to South Koreans. It's not appealing to people in South America and Africa. It is a little bit to people in London, I guess.
Sort of.
But really, it appeals to us. It appeals to Americans.
And I think a lot of that is why it is so the support is so entrenched, because it's ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if there's one thing about America is that they're very protective of their things that make them American. And people have drawn the comparisons to the military-industrial complex, but the language that's used in football and the way that they have completely and totally aligned themselves with anything that is vaguely patriotic.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And it really speaks to that visceral feeling that you see with a hit. People feel that viscerally when they are bombarded with patriotic imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And the NFL has done a lot of work to get people to subliminally think, football is patriotic. It is your duty as an American to like this. It's the biggest thing.
There's truth to that, right?
Yeah, and if you're not involved in this conversation, you're not involved in an American conversation.
Yeah, you're less of a man, honestly. I mean, as far as me as a man, I mean, especially when I go to the Midwest, that I tend not to tell people I don't watch football, because all at once you really are unpatriotic. You're a pretty bad person at that point. Not something I go around waving around.
Did you guys see this absolutely insane Buccaneers promotion about appealing to their female fans?
No.
They have a new section.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
They have a new section of their website. And I can't remember what they call it. It has some stupid name. But it's a section of their website that's dedicated to female Bucks fans. And it's supposed to, you know, I guess...
I'm already bummed out. Yeah. I already kind of know what's coming, because they've tried to do this before.
And I think that probably the original kernel of the idea was, hey, listen, there are a lot of female fans of the NFL now who are kind of underserved by the marketing and by the way that we reach out to our fans. You know, there's kind of an assumption that the typical fan is, you know,
macho meathead.
A macho meathead guy with a, you know, a beer in hand sitting around with his buddies while, like, the nagging wife is, you know, in the room next door. Yeah. That's kind of the stereotype. But there are legitimately a lot of women who love football, who love the NFL, who go to games, who watch games, who are as engaged as any male fan. And the Buccaneers, having just discovered this apparently, decided they wanted to do a service for their female fans. So they have a part of their website that helps to explain some of the finer points of the game.
Oh.
Such as, you know, what's a timeout?
Oh.
Were you wondering what a timeout is? Let's explain it to you. Let's mansplain it to you.
Let's mansplain it to you. Yes.
And so, there is an unmistakable condescension, whatever. Yeah. There's a paternal aspect to football.
Right, absolutely. And this is not, again, you know, it would even still be bad if it was targeted towards women and the sort of, you know, the info, like, you know, was kind of complex stuff. Like, we're going to explain to you what the cover two defense is. You know, maybe you hear this term. You're a Bucks fan. We were one of the progenitors of the cover two. Let's explain how it works. Even that's still condescending, because it implies that, like, well, the male fans already know.
Clearly no.
But at least you can
don't know.
Yeah, right. But at least you can say, like, well, you know, these are things that all fans probably should know or
we don't need
know.
To attach,
like,
a gender to it.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But, you know, whatever. They're going to make the women even more educated than the men. Great.
Yeah.
But this was, like, really, really foundational, like, basic. Like, if you have watched 3 minutes of football in your life, you will understand what these words are.
Or you just you understand context clues.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Not playing anymore. It's like they're out of time.
Right, yeah. Right. And they have other stuff on there that's similar.
What's with the yellow hankies going right, on
right,
the
yeah,
field?
Yeah, it's really worth
it. Don't worry, it's not litter.
Yeah. But, it kind of typifies all that we're talking about. They're like, even when they're trying to get it right, they get it so wrong. And this wasn't Roger Goodell, this was the Bucks, but it's a good example of what you were talking about, that, you know, the 32 owners probably are just as lousy and horrible, if not worse, than Goodell, but we focus on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you get to know Jerry Richardson from the Carolina Panthers and you get to hear some of the things he says about player salaries, it will drive you crazy. Mm-hmm. But we don't really hear these owners talk much, for good reason, because we want to focus all of our hate on this guy that literally hasn't done a single thing right, except for the money.
Except for make a ton of money for everybody.
I want to ask you, in the last 5 years, has there been something the NFL has done that makes you like football more?
I'm hard-pressed to come up with it.
I do think, for what it's worth, the NFL Rules Committee is pretty good about addressing issues.
They're on top of it.
They're on top of it. Yeah, like they. So,
because that's a brand management issue.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, this, like, they I think they're fairly thoughtful in the way that they roll things out, and not sometimes they're a little reactionary, where, you know, we saw this with, like, Belichick came up with this, you know, this scheme last year that involved, you know, some motion that was arguably
borderline.
Yeah, borderline. Yeah. And then
the way Belichick does, though.
Exactly. And then the rules committee came in and said, okay, well, no, that's actually. That's
illegal. Violating the spirit of the rule, and yeah. we're going to write this down.
Right.
Which is what a rules committee does.
Yeah. But I do think that in general, there have been rule changes that they have implemented that have improved the quality of play, or have at least done things to eliminate certain risks associated with play. So I don't know. That's a really small area. But I think that that's something where there clearly a lot of thought that goes into that process. It's hard to know how much of that you can give credit to Goodell for, I guess.
You know, the NFL, the TV show, has gotten pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Red Zone channel.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I think the Sunday night broadcast on NBC is spectacular. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the best sports broadcasts of any sport, you know, regularly occurring. I think they do a really nice job presenting the game on television.
Oh, gosh, yeah. They do an amazing job presenting it on television.
They edit the game better. The commentators have had to up their game because now the internet will point out when you're just flat out wrong. You can't just be a lazy commentator anymore. There are a lot of really bad ones. There are a lot of really bad ones, but there's a place to go to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like you watch like an 11 a.m. Fifth rate AFC matchup on CBS, and you get that you get the guy that's not even as good as Phil Simms, and Phil Simms is already really bad. It gets rough.
I think one of the things that really pierces the illusion that quarterbacks are, you know, these geniuses, you know, who are conductors, who are conducting a very complex symphony.
They're all Peyton Manning. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that pretty much every single color guy who is a former quarterback is an absolute moron.
You're exactly right, Matt.
Thank you, Troy.
It's rough.
I mean, I guess that's a good reminder. There's football intelligence and there's real world intelligence.
Yep. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Football intelligence is something that I don't have. If you put me out there and you had me go through four progressions in 2.5 seconds while there are, you know, six guys bearing down on me about to break both of my legs, I would struggle with that. But,
legs broken.
Yeah. But you know what? I don't need to know what the guy who's good at making that decision has to say 15 years after he retired.
With minimal broadcasting skills.
Yeah, with no broadcasting skills. Yeah. I mean, there's no direct translation between being able to make that progression of reads and then being able to speak intelligently about it in real
time.
On a
live mic in front of 13 million people.
Yeah, not easy.
Yeah, Chris Collinsworth is the best at it.
Yes,
and
definitely.
He was a wide receiver.
Yeah.
And he happens to know more about offensive line schemes than anybody I've seen broadcast a football game since John Madden.
But he's also just a naturally gifted broadcaster.
Yeah. He's good at talking.
He's a great speaker.
He really is.
He has an easy delivery. He's you know, funny in a way that's not forced.
And he gets along with Al Michaels.
Yeah, and that's important.
Because, you know, Al Michaels, obviously Hall of Famer, one of the greats to ever step to a microphone, he's had a number of, let's call them, overwhelmed sidekicks, and he's done his best to sell all of them. He doesn't have to sell Collinsworth. Mm-hmm. So I feel like he's having the best time of his career calling football with this guy this late into the game, and that's kind of a special thing that you don't really... I get really wrapped up in the rhythm of these... announcers' careers. I think it's really interesting, and to see like Al Michaels in his 70s having a really nice time calling football with a buddy, and they're doing a really good job. I think that's cool. I think everything else with the NFL is a complete mess.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's true. You know, I want to address real quickly because this comes up so often, and I see it in memes a lot on Facebook. It's something that my family people always talk about. If you go to a party, somebody's going to say, well, we pay these football players all this money, and we don't pay teachers. And I think that this is a part of the moral issue that we're talking about. But it drives me a little bonkers, people who say that.
I agree.
Because
it's a false equivalency.
Yeah, well, it's false. And gosh, if you really are so upset about it, then don't be paying your cable bill. Don't be spending money on cable. Don't be buying all these jerseys. Don't be going to these games. That's why it makes money is why these guys make money. Gosh, they should make more money than they do.
Yeah, they should make more money.
It's the truth of the matter. They've got a salary cap. It's stupid. It doesn't make any sense. It goes against a lot of what capitalism is.
There's one thing about football that makes it less fun for me to follow, and it is how complicated their cap is.
Mm-hmm.
A big reason why we were able to talk about the NBA for six straight weeks this summer is because, you know, their cap is complicated, but it at least makes intuitive sense. Mm-hmm. I can figure out player movement. It enhances the free agent and trade markets. The NFL doesn't have any of that. When these guys sign contracts, the numbers are make-believe. Mm-hmm. I mean, last night, Phillip Rivers signed a contract for $140 million, or whatever make-believe number they attached to it. It's 65 in guarantees. It's the only number you have to pay attention to.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
These reporters keep reporting these massive numbers as if they're gospel, but they're nonsense. Mm-hmm. And I can't get on board with football's player movement the same way because I can't make sense of what the cap. I don't even know what the cap number is.
Then there's the whole issue of like dead space.
Yeah, dead money.
And how all that works. You know,
when a guy gets cut, whether he makes that roster bonus or they have these dates that you have to make the team by, you cannot keep any of it straight.
No, it's all baffling.
And even when guys aren't cut, like, and this, I have no idea how this works. And I suppose I could take 10 minutes and take a look into it on the internet, but I really don't care enough to do that. But Ndamukong Suh is still going to be one of the highest paid players on the Lions this year.
Yes.
And he wasn't cut. You know, he wasn't traded. He signed as a free agent. But just because of some, you know, weird quirk.
When he got drafted and how he signed his deal and how it was structured, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Like $6 million or something on there of, you know, cap space and dead money to Suh to that.
Yeah, that's.
And we don't know who pays it. We don't even know if that's money he gets.
Yeah. Is that money that he got, you know, 6 years ago, but now it's accounted for on the cap now? I have no idea. It's all very, very complicated.
I
agree,
it.
Nick.
Yeah. I hate it.
And there's no trades, too, like of players.
Yeah.
You know, player for player, because of the cap complexities, you know, you can trade a player for picks, but it's, you know, this part of why the Kiki Alonso, LeSean McCoy trade was so interesting is it's so rare to have, you know, Pro Bowl caliber players traded for each other.
Name guys
traded for each other in the same deal. That just never, ever happens.
Like, you can list them on one hand. I mean, I remember the Champ Bailey-Clinton Portis trade.
Yeah, oh, that's
yeah,
good.
No.
Was mm-hmm. so good. Mm-hmm. And I remember being so excited because the Broncos were getting Champ Bailey.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't happen in the NFL anymore. And they trade them for these picks that don't seem like they're equitable for the guy, but then they are because of where they figure into the cap and where this guy's going to get paid, and you're cutting bait before he's too broken down to play anymore. And I can't do it.
Yeah.
No, and trades are part of something that in baseball and basketball, gosh, we love as sports
it's the best.
Fans, right?
Yeah, it's
that's
the greatest.
That's a lot of fun to talk about and to think about and that's completely lacking in the NFL. It really is. That's something that.
Yeah. I also think before we move on to pretending to know what we're going to talk about in terms of what's going to happen in the NFL season, I also think one of the kind of unspoken realities of the NFL is that even though there's much higher fan engagement and there are more people who think they follow the NFL and think they can talk intelligently about it, it is basically impossible to be able to assess the talent level and performance of 85% of the players on the field at any given time. You can kind of judge when, like, a quarterback or another skill position player is doing their job. And if somebody screws something up, you can generally see if they screwed it up. But most of the time, you really, if you think you know, you probably don't. Because it's extremely complex, and the schemes are complex, and the finer points of the game are complex, and the nature of the way that the game is shot means that you're just not seeing a lot of stuff. I mean, we have no way, in watching a broadcast, of being able to assess you know, cover cornerbacks unless they're making an interception, really, because they're just off the screen.
Yep. Sure.
You know, you don't
really and there are
see
no
that.
Stats for linemen, really, right? I mean,
they're very, I mean, we're entering an era where there are more advanced stats, but certainly not in the kind of popular lexicon.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. It's just as a sports fan, is there any kind of a stat that I can just throw out there? And that's completely lacking for linemen. That also is, that's also been one of the issues that I probably, reasons I didn't get into football when I was younger, too, is because I loved the stats of baseball. I loved that. That really drew me in. Mm-hmm. And there's a lack of that in football. And then it's
four
always...
Four guys get stats in football.
Yeah. And then it's always weird that they throw them into the Hall of Fame. Like, how do you measure that then? It's just an eye test.
Yeah. And it's your number of times you made the Pro Bowl. You know,
yeah.
How many coaches respected you? Mm-hmm.
How many people really liked you? Exactly. That's what it comes down to. There's one other moral issue, and we've kind of touched on it, but it's the way that these cities, and it's happening right now to San Diego, and it's happening in Oakland, the way they get, and it happens in baseball as well. Certainly baseball, more than basketball, I feel like. But it's where they get
the Milwaukee Bucks right now.
Oh,
Scott
no,
Walker.
That's true.
It's Seattle
true.
Sonics. Yeah.
So, but they get hamstrung by these franchises to pay hundreds of millions of dollars for
public money
for their stadiums, and that there is public good to it. There is. I get that. I get that it's good that we're entertained. It's good that we have outlets. But at the same time, having said that, this outlet of football, what we're talking about subsidizing is something that we're saying is kind of not a good thing.
It is a disastrous economic model.
Oh, yeah.
It does not check out. Every analysis they want to throw at you about the amount of money that these stadiums generate around, it does not hold water.
Mm-hmm.
It just flat out doesn't. And the fact that these people come in straight face saying, I demand tax dollars. I need to siphon this money away from schools, roads, and infrastructure.
Yeah.
For luxury suites in a stadium that doesn't need to be redone is among the most evil things that currently happens in America.
In a sport where, as we started this show off with, there's collateral damage. It's not just the people who are playing it. It's the people around them who are getting drugged by their hair.
There is private money to build these stadiums.
Well, yeah.
They can build it with their own money. It's if they want to go completely conservative with it, it's private enterprise. We're going to let you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Do not take that. Do not take the public money, the handout, that corporate welfare structure that is so infuriating that needs to end yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just one of the, another issue that really comes up with, I mean, when we, recently we had the probe go by Pluto, right? And it was millions of dollars. It's a fraction of what a football stadium costs, right? And this is for science, for the good of humanity. I mean, we're doing something that's pretty good, and people still complain about NASA's budget. But people,
football fans do.
Yeah, football fans, in fact, are the ones who are complaining about NASA's budget. And so that's just another of the many moral issues that football is hoisting upon us.
I'm still excited for football, though.
I'm excited to watch more of it. And I love college football. College football, I've never really left. I always at least show up for the bowl seasons. I always pay attention to the U of A. But as we've talked before, I wonder if that minor league system for the NFL isn't going to start drying up. Mike Ditka says he wouldn't let his son play football.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, if that's really the case, I mean, obviously my wife says she doesn't care about football as much as Mike Ditka. There are more moms than soccer, right? 20 years from now, do you guys really see soccer as becoming a bigger sport because of this? Because more moms are going to be sending their kids to soccer.
You're not getting rid of football.
Yeah, I'm with Nick.
It's just, if it becomes NASCAR, if it becomes a political dividing line, that's as divisive as I see it happening. It's too entrenched. It's especially in small towns, when it's Friday night and it's time to go watch the high school play, that's not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So we are officially morally conflicted here on Can't Wait, but coming up after the break, we're going to talk about the stuff that we actually enjoy about this game we've just spent a half hour ragging on here on Can't Wait.